This is Radio Times. I'm Marty Moss Coaim. Jackie Gleason was a comedian and actor probably best known for playing Ralph Cramden in The Honeymooners when TV was black and white. He was a loudmouth dreamer with many get-rich-quick schemes who lived with his sensible and long-suffering wife, Alice, at least that's how I saw her, played by Audrey Meadows. Here's a lightly edited scene from the show where they're arguing about mambo dance lessons she's taking with a teacher named Carlos.
He treats us like women. That's something you've forgotten too, Ralph. You seem to have forgotten that I am a woman.
I forgot that you're a woman? How could I? You're always yapping.
What do you mean I don't treat you like a woman? I treat you like a woman. I let you sew, I let you cook, I let you wash the windows, I let you clean up. Boys don't do that, Alice.
That's right, Ralph. That's all a wife is to you, Ralph. Just a handy utensil to have around the house. A wife can cook and slave and clean for you all day long. You would never think of saying something pleasant to her. You wouldn't even think of doing a simple little gentlemanly thing like tipping your hat.
Now, get my supper!
Get it yourself!
You're gonna do the mambo! You're going to do the mambo, but it's going to be in the moon.
1812 Productions is presenting a new comedy, To the Moon, inspired by the life and career of Jackie Gleason. It's at the Christchurch Neighborhood House in Old City, Philadelphia through May 17th. Our guest, Jen Childs, producing artistic director and co-founder of 1812, wrote the play after reading through the archives of Jackie Gleason's head writer that were stored in his son's basement in suburban Philadelphia. She joins us on Radio Times, along with actor Scott Greer and Tony Lawton, featured in To the Moon, and it's a great pleasure to have all three of you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you very much.
Great to be here.
Thank you.
So were you alive when Jackie Gleason was on TV, Jen
well,
Childs?
I feel like once he was on TV, he's been on TV in reruns, and, you know, I certainly didn't watch the originals in the 50s, but I watched them on reruns late night. And I said this the other day, I don't remember watching The Honeymooners, but I also don't remember not knowing what it was. It was always just a part of our culture, I think.
So. How about for you, Scott?
Yeah, the same. I was a huge fan growing up, and I don't ever remember, like, the first time I saw it. I just always, you know, I remember watching the reruns after school and, you know, TBS, I think, yeah. Or Nick at Night, yeah. And, you know, and was always a big fan, you know.
I mean, it's so interesting to hear it and not see it. Of course, this is radio, and that's what we do. But I said to you when I saw the play, I said to you, Scott, that he scared me as a kid. I was maybe too young or too sheltered to see the humor.
Yeah, I guess I can see that. I don't know. I mean, I think he's also – he was such a brilliant clown that it was pretty clear – from watching Audrey Meadows that he was all bluster, and there was never a moment where you were worried that she was never for a second worried that he would hurt her or send her to the moon, and she could just diffuse him by looking at him, you know. And so I don't know, I guess I always took comfort in that, you know, that it was just never, you know. Yeah.
How about for you, Tony?
No, he's a little before my time, but in my oldest brother, it was a big part of his childhood. That not only the Honeymooners, but the Jackie Gleason's variety show and all the sketch characters that Gleason did. My understanding is he never missed it and kept him in stitches.
Oh, indeed. Yeah. But what's so interesting, and perhaps this is something that someone like you, Jen, would dream of, that a patron of 1812, father, was the head writer for Jackie Gleason, comes up to you and says, oh, by the way,
yes.
I have a basement full of scripts and jokes.
Yeah, it was a comedy nerd girl's dream, you know. Greg Marks, who is an 1812 patron, we had done a tribute to Sid Caesar, and it happened exactly as you said. He, you know, my dad was the head writer. He wrote also for many, many comics, Sid Caesar, Toadie Fields, but Gleason was his man. And so being able to kind of sift through this archive of vintage material and having such access to it. It was really inspirational.
I mean, what was there? What
were you
looking through?
Well, first of all, there's bound copies of all the Honeymooners episodes. Greg says his father thought that the episodes that had Gleason's handwritten notes on them were too messy, so he threw those away.
Oh.
I know. So he has cleanly bound copies of all the originals. And then it's just file folders full of jokes. You know, his variety show, there were certain sections that of his monologue that he would always do. There was always a joke about the band leader's jacket, Sammy Spear jokes. So there's file folders filled with just 500 one-liners about Sammy's, you know, it's a beautiful jacket, Sam. You look like the only case that Perry Mason ever lost, you know. You look like both members of the Odd Couple. And they just go on. Another file that's did you ever, things that aggravate me, brainstormed scenes, scenarios for any number of his different characters that don't even have scripts attached to them, but just what if Rum Dum did this, or what if the sad, the poor soul did this?
I mean, it's really getting inside the mind of these, I guess, writers and also Jackie Gleason himself.
Yeah.
And before this play, would people come up to you, Scott Greer, and say, hey, you look a lot like Jackie Gleason?
Desmond Ryan, who used to review theater for The Enquirer about 10 years ago, said, Greer looks more and more like Jackie Gleason with each passing performance. I think he was commenting about my weight, but
which
yeah,
features
I've gotten
a lot
that before
in this production.
Sure.
I have to say,
that's right.
I have to say,
yeah, for your listeners, I weigh 130 pounds.
Everyone's thinner on radio.
That's right. That's right.
And more beautiful too.
Yeah.
Perhaps we should talk a little bit about the premise, because it isn't like the Jackie. It isn't like taking one of these scripts and then putting it on the stage. So, what's the plot here?
What's the plot? Well, that was the big question. Usually, when I make a show, especially about comedic history, which we have a long history of doing, I go, I want to look at this person. I go out and do the research. This was the first time that all this research was given to me, and I had to sort of go, what do I want to say about it? Do I have anything to say?
Yeah.
And I knew I didn't want to do a biopic of Jackie Gleason that belongs on television. I didn't want to just redo The Honeymooners. But to me, you know, I've talked to a lot of people who say, oh, I love Jackie Gleason. And I find after talking to them a little bit, what they really mean is they love Ralph Kramden. And what is it about that character that lasts? What is it about it that captures our hearts, that has become so familiar, that has been passed down to The Simpsons and King of Queens? And it's that drive and desire not only to send somebody to the moon, you know, as a threat, but also as a dream. Uh-huh. And so I started thinking about what if there was a contemporary Ralph Kramden type who had big dreams of being a Jackie Gleason type. And so it is about Scotty and Lawton, two actors and Scotty has big dreams of constant get-rich-quick schemes that all surround making it big like Jackie Gleason.
Well, I'd love to have the two of you, Scott Greer, Tony Lawton, do a short scene from To the Moon.
Love to.
I should actually set it up It takes place at a bus stop, and Lawton's character is always in a funny outfit. This time he is, it's just important to know he's dressed as a clown.
Gotcha.
Because my guy's an actor too. And,
yes.
Yeah, all right.
They should have called by now, Lawton.
Not necessarily.
Nope. They said they were going to call me about a callback, and they haven't called. If I got the job, they would have called.
Not necessarily.
It's been 24 hours. These things are always settled very quickly.
Not necessarily.
Did they call you?
Not necessarily. No? And look at me. I'm not worried.
Of course you're not worried, Lawton. You only auditioned because you were there with me, and they needed somebody to read for the neighbor who comes in at the end.
So?
So you didn't take it seriously? You don't really want that job?
I do so want that job.
Not like I want it. I mean, that casting director was so enthusiastic, so positive. She said I was inspired.
She said I was memorable.
Of course you were memorable, Lawton. You were dressed as a hot dog.
Wouldn't it be great if we both got it?
This could change the course of my career, Lawton. It could be my destiny. Oh, God, Tracy's going to be so disappointed. She was so proud of me. Also, I thought I'd be making that national commercial cash, so I bought some things.
Uh-oh.
And not much, you know. A couple books about Gleason's life, a DVD set of The Honeymooners. I wanted to do my research before I shot the commercial. You know, show those guys that I am more than just an imitator. I am an artist.
Yes, you are.
Like, for instance, I read that Gleason was a big believer in UFOs and alien life. So when I said, one of these days, to the moon, I was going to have a moment afterwards where I pointed up to the skies with a knowing look. Huh?
A knowing look?
Yeah, like I know there's aliens up there. Huh?
On the moon?
Yes.
Huh? And that's why you're sending her to the moon, because you want her to believe in the aliens too.
No, I'm threatening to send her to the moon because I'm angry.
Oh, and the aliens are a good way to scare her.
No, I don't want to scare her.
Then why are you threatening her?
I'm not really threatening her.
Then why are you sending her to the moon?
I'm not really sending her to the moon.
Then how is she going to see the aliens?
There are no aliens.
But you just said you know there are aliens. You gave a knowing look. Huh?
Yes, because Gleason thought they were aliens.
Then I don't think you should give a knowing look. I think you should give a thinking look. This says, I know there are aliens. Huh? This says, I think there are aliens.
That is the stupidest thing I have ever heard.
I'm just saying, I don't think you should do the knowing look.
Well, I'm probably not going to do the knowing look, am I? I'm probably not going to do any look because I'm probably not doing the commercial.
Sorry.
That's all right.
They may still call, Scotty.
Anyway, you going to the poker game tonight?
Nah, we gotta go to Nina's mom's house and put together some bookshelves.
My condolences.
Yeah, that bus better come soon. I'm gonna be late.
Now, where's the party?
West Side. Lunch hour surprise party at the office. The birthday boy's named Lucas, and he's turning 27.
27?
Yeah, his girlfriend said she wanted a clown because she thought it would be ironic.
Yikes.
Pays well.
I gotta get back to work. See you, Lawton.
Oh, that was great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Again, Scott Greer and Tony Lawton doing a scene from To the Moon. Tell us a bit about the character you play, Tony. His name happens to be Tony Lawton.
Yeah. Well, you just call it Lawton because it sounded like
Lawton.
Sound like Norton.
Yeah.
He's another sort of low-level actor like Scott. He's scrambling along and he gets kind of goofy jobs. He does a lot of commercials and things where he has to dress up as food and
a lot of condiment commercials,
condiments,
right?
Cowboys and that kind of thing. But whereas Scotty has a sort of a real burning ambition, Lawton is a little more contented. It's not that he doesn't want to make it big, but he's happier from day to day.
Just kind of going with it, whatever sort of comes his way.
Yeah, he enjoys Scott's friendship and his other, you know, he's got a wife and he's not losing any sleep.
Well, let's take a very short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. That's Tony Lawton. He has been acting in Philadelphia for more than 20 years now. I should add that the Philadelphia City Paper named him the city's best one-man theater. And this for his solo productions of The Devil and Billy Markham, The Great Divorce, The Screwtape Letters. Also with us, Scott Greer. He's been a 20-year veteran of the Philadelphia theater scene. He has won 4 Barrymore Awards for Excellence in Theater, also named 2014's Best Theater Talent by Philadelphia Magazine. Also with us, Jennifer Childs, producing artistic director, co-founder of 1812 Productions. Awards to her name as well. We're talking about their production of To the Moon. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowen, talking with playwright Jennifer Childs and actors Scott Greer and Anthony Lawton about their production To the Moon, the latest production of 1812 Productions. And it's inspired by the career of Jackie Gleason, his time spent on The Honeymooners. The play follows the exploits of two-bit actors and hopeless dreamer Scotty, who's played by Greer, and his interactions with his wife Tracy. Also his neighbor Lawton, played by our guest Anthony Lawton. And all this inspired by the comedy and career of Jackie Gleason. If you want to join the conversation, send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. So, Jennifer, I'm just curious about how you, as you said, you didn't want to do, it's not about Jackie Gleason, but inspired by Jackie Gleason, sort of how you began to construct this, this play, this comedy.
Well, it started, I knew that I wanted, if I was going to do anything about Gleason, I wanted to work with Scott and I wanted to work with Tony. The two of them have a long history of working together. They have a natural energy on stage that lends itself very well. So we did a workshop and we talked a lot about how do you put how do you put somebody's life on stage? And I wrote a scene, which is actually still in the play, just to kind of see what it was like to write in that voice. And it worked really, really well. They were very
to your
funny.
Surprise?
To my surprise. Well, you know, sometimes. not all of them go that well. And so then it just became the idea. We were also very fortunate to work with Bill Irwin, who is an astonishing master clown, who came in and worked with us on physicality. And the first time he came in to work with us, he, I didn't really have a full plot. And he approaches everything from physicality first.
Right.
And so he worked with the guys on a soft shoe, this very sweet little soft shoe. And I watched it and I found it very, very inspirational. I thought, I think that's the end. I think the end is a soft shoe on the moon. And so then it became writing from the start to how do you get to the moon. And so it's some of it is structured and borrowed from the energy of Honeymooners, others from is just my own divine.
And when you're writing comedy, mm-hmm. do you laugh? Do you make yourself laugh? Or is it just too hard? You have to try it out on somebody else.
I don't know that I laugh out loud to myself. Sometimes I write something so stupid that I do. But most times it's my brow is pretty furrowed. And then when somebody else reads it out loud, then I can laugh.
Well, and to you, Scott, as you play the sort of Scott, but nonetheless the sort of Jackie Gleason character, I mean, you are light on your toes. And he had he had that same kind of quality as big as he was. He moved so beautifully in many ways.
He was incredible. I light on my toes. Every choreographer in Philadelphia is laughing hysterically at that.
Right.
But it was a great I really appreciate that. It was a great aspiration of mine. You can't do it and not move because he was extraordinary. He moved big for any, I mean, he moved well for any size man, let alone a guy over 300 pounds.
Yeah.
And there's a flip that he does. And Bill Irwin, I went to him and I was like, hey, can you, he has this flip where they call it in circus parlance, the 108, where you from a standing position, flip completely over and land on your back. You kick your leg up and, you know, and he would do it. And I was like, can you teach me to do that? And Bill was like, no, absolutely not. Yeah, he a good acrobat friend of his like ruined his career doing that, and he was like, "No way," you know.
Well, and I should add that Bill Irwin actually has been a guest on Radio Times in the past, an actor, clown, really extraordinary person in so many ways. I'm curious for you, Tony, what did he teach you?
Well, he's been a. I saw him on PBS when I was in high school, and he was sort of my springboard, I think, into acting. I might not have been an actor if he hadn't inspired me. I've done little workshops with him here and there. He teaches. He always wants to get back to the basics and in the body, and you know, he sort of constantly has to remind me to keep my knees soft, you know, and that frees up the whole body and kind of remind me to breathe, and you know that. Anger is not as funny as one thinks it is.
And oh, is that right?
Yeah. Oh. I mean, it's a trap for some actors to go straight to anger, and he tries to find alternatives before that choice.
Well, I'm glad you said that because in many ways, as I said, you know, Jackie Gleason scared me. I just heard the anger,
right.
But obviously there's humor. Comedy embedded.
Yeah,
in all
you
that.
Need a lot of. I mean, for the anger to work, in a vacuum, Cramden wouldn't be funny, you know.
Yeah.
But you need the characters. You need the Alice figure and the Norton figure around him to release that, so the audience can watch and know that okay. And in fact. Audrey Meadows was the second Alice. There was a woman.
Kurt Kelton,
right?
Yeah.
Who was a wonderful actor, but perhaps a little too good because she would take this in and it made him look like a monster and it wasn't funny. And the first time Audrey Meadows crossed her arms and looked at him and it was like magic. You
right.
know,
because she's not scared of him, right?
Right, precisely. And
but
so
I think it also you need that pathos and vulnerability in him, and that was the writers and Gleason very wisely allowed you to see Ralph's vulnerability every once in a while.
Innocence.
And innocence. I think that's, very much so.
It's a big part of any honeymooner's plot that Ralph at a certain point feels remorse and feels sorry for himself. And that's the,
Well, and Jackie Gleason's life, I mean, the little I know about it, he seemed like a kind of a lonely guy, perhaps. He had a hard life growing up.
I think, one of the things that we were fond of saying in this process is that while for a Ralph Cramden type, a Jackie Gleason type was the dream, that in many ways, for Jackie Gleason, Ralph Cramden was a dream, you know, a best friend and a wife that would stand by you no matter what. He had an empire. I mean, Jackie Gleason was just a media mogul. But he did have a hard scrabble life growing up and struggled in Hollywood, struggled to kind of find his way and make it. And I don't think he actually started doing TV until he was in his mid-30s. Wow. So he kicked around a lot. And he was married 3 times. And you also get the sense from reading biographies, et cetera, that he had a lot of golfing buddies and a lot of drinking buddies. But
maybe no friends or some deep friends. I mean,
no Norton.
Right.
No Norton.
Right. Exactly. He loved to party and he loved to hold court and buy the whole bar a drink and get it. He hated to fly, so he would go everywhere by train and he would hire a band and have, 24-hour cooks. But he fired all of his friends over and over again. And, he and Art Carney had a very complicated relationship. He was very suspicious and fearful that Carney was getting too much attention, and he did not have a Norton,
Interesting. Well, we're talking about Jackie Gleason, who has inspired 1812 Productions' new comedy. It's called To the Moon, and again, inspired by the life and career of Jackie Gleason. It's at Christchurch Neighborhood House in Old City through May 17th. And talking with Jennifer Childs, producing artistic director, co-founder of 1812, and she wrote the play. Actually, after reading through archives of Jackie Gleason's head writer, happened to be stored in a basement outside of Philadelphia. And she joins us along with actors Scott Greer and Tony Lawton, who are featured in To the Moon. It's really just 4 actors featured in the play. And to join our conversation, give us a call, 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at @whyyradiotimes. Part of this whole premise is that Scott Greer, play a guy whose job it is to be a standardized patient. Now, when I saw the play, I thought, Jennifer Childs made this up, for the play, but apparently not. This is something that actors often do.
Yeah.
Does that work?
Well, I've not done it myself, but Tony did it for years, so perhaps he can answer
that
more.
I was a standardized patient for 5 or 6 years, and the setup is they have 12 standardized patients in 12 rooms, and there's 12 doctors. And at the time I was working, there was mostly foreign doctors, but sometimes American students would come in. And a doctor would go into a room, he'd be in there for 15 minutes, and he would examine a patient who had a set of fictional symptoms.
And you were the patient, right?
I was a patient, and I had to wear a hospital gown. I was depressed for 5 years, and I had kidney stones for about 6 months, and I had lung cancer for a little while.
Dark humor there.
Yeah. So, and the doctor comes in, he does the exam, he or she leaves, and then the standardized patient evaluates the doctor largely on bedside manner, but also on English usage, other factors.
Sort of procedural. Some bedside manner things like that.
Yeah. So we grade the doctor, and then he passes or fails. And at that time, it was part of the certification process for foreign doctors. I don't know if that's still the case.
Oh, interesting. But that's a way that actors, I guess, instead of being in a commercial to pay the bills, you would be a standardized patient.
It was a good hourly wage. The hours were flexible. Right. So you could call out and say, I have an audition. But in the middle of a shift, it was difficult. Poor Scotty tries to do it in the middle of a shift. And that's...
Yeah. I mean, Scott, you sort of push against all the sort of rules that are the script, I guess, you're supposed to follow as a standardized patient.
Right. Well, he... he thinks that the job is beneath him, and he is meant for better things than being a standardized patient. So he has a very sort of contentious relationship with his supervisor, Nora, and, yeah, is constantly trying to break the rules and, you know.
Instead of feeling like whoever wrote this is wrong or doesn't understand me.
Yeah, right.
Evil, maybe.
Right. Whoever, right. Yeah.
We were trying, when writing, I was trying to come up with what is an acting version of driving a bus and an acting version of working in the sewers. And the thing about standardized patient is, like, bus driver, it's a good job.
Yeah.
It's a really good, solid
yeah.
job, yeah. absolutely good pay, but you're never going to get discovered there. Nobody's going to come in and say, boy, when you were that guy with kidney stones, I think I have a job for you on Broadway. You know, it's like,
But I was also wondering whether you were saying something about how actors feel about writers and what writers write for actors.
Well,
was that embedded in there somehow?
Maybe subconsciously. I think it's more just, yes, they give a control, you know, and as Scotty says later in the play, his whole life is about doing things that other people tell him to do.
Right.
Lines that other people have written. And proving that he can, you know.
Yeah. I mean, there's some truth to that, isn't there?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, less the writers than just the nature of the business itself. You feel, you know, that you really do not have control over, you know. And you're sort of, yeah, asked to do this and do that. And if you don't want to, they'll find somebody else to do it. And, you know, even very good actors all the time, you know, famous film actors are let go of a project, if you know what
yeah.
I mean? You're constantly, you're never the boss. And so Gleason's kind of empire is attractive to Scotty.
Because he thinks of himself as bigger
yeah,
than
he
that.
Yeah, he does it. Yeah, he does it. Right. He's meant for more.
He's too good for this.
Right.
You were saying, Tony, before going on the air that you were actually fired as a standardized patient?
A couple times, yeah. They fired me because I was spending too much time in rehearsal. They required a certain minimum amount of availability. So they fired me, which was kind of a mixed blessing, you know. But so I went back because the money was really good, and I begged them. I said, listen, please, you know, if I promise you, if you hire me back, I'll give you the hours you want. They said, okay. And then I immediately broke that promise, and they fired me again. So,
And have you, in this play, the character you play does a lot of commercials and has to dress up in a lot of crazy uniforms,
yeah.
including or ketchup mustard. I mean, have you done commercials in your real life?
I haven't had to do anything really silly like that. I did a really, really bad movie a couple of years ago.
Oh, you did?
It was an appalling movie. It was so bad.
Do we know the name of it?
No. It will never see the light of day because it's so bad.
It paid pretty good, though, right?
It paid very well, but it was – so I took – in fact, I turned down the job at the Walnut for that job, Walnut being the best paying theater in town. But I thought this was going to be my springboard into, and then I just realized it was.
Did you realize it sort of in process while it was being made that this is going to be
I
terrible?
I accepted the job, then I read the whole script.
Oh.
And I went, oh no, it was so bad, and it was it was embarrassing, in process it was embarrassing to make it.
Oh,
yeah.
You could just sort of see around you that.
Ooh.
we're on our Google now. And we want to try to figure this thing out.
It's called Star Wars.
No, the title
there
is.
There have been some bad Star Wars.
There's a trailer on YouTube. It's called Patrick, but you spell it without the K on the end.
Oh, Patric?
Yeah, but
okay.
Hop
on the Google.
Well, the trailer makes it look like it's pretty good, actually.
But enough for you, Scott.
Well,
live
industrials are perhaps the most embarrassing. Yes. Where you're hired by a company, usually a large pharmaceutical, to do any number. The worst story I ever heard, and this makes it in the script a little bit. A friend of ours, who I don't think is acting anymore, but he and his girlfriend had just moved to Philadelphia, and they got a gig. It was a corporate event, a party, and she got the easy part. She just had to greet it was at a hotel, and she just had to greet the guests and tell them where to go to the ballroom. He had to put on a horse head and run around a little improvised paddock in the ballroom while drunken party guests roped him for prizes. And he was told at one point that they were getting too many prizes and that he needed to be friskier. And he was paid not – they didn't get money. They were paid in a gift certificate because they had just moved. They needed furniture. And so the guy says, no, a friend of mine has a furniture store. You can – here's like $600 worth of whatever furniture you want. And they go to the address and there's not – it's not only not a furniture store. There's nothing there.
Well, yeah. And were you trying to sort of tap into some of this?
Yes.
In this play?
Yes, very much. I mean, I think we've all done and the thing is, the worst part of all these jobs is they pay you better than playing Hamlet. Yeah. Or, it is right after college, I was paid to dress up as a country and western singer, Cookie West. Nabisco was trying out a new kind of like the Pillsbury Doughboy, the Nabisco Cookie Girl, and to tell stories and sing songs about Oreos in grocery stores around the tri-state area.
Oh my goodness.
To go in and doing a half-hour show singing. And it was the best money I'd made in my entire life. Mm-hmm. But that idea of that pull between having money and having satisfaction
and having dignity.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it was sweet. Pharmaceuticals had a lot of money. And one time I went to the Bahamas for a week and I worked for 15 minutes every day and then, drank on the beach, which was great. But, time we were hired, there was I can't remember, they had reached $1 billion in sales. And so they were throwing a big party for all their employees. And so we were to look like we were reporting on the news. We were to look like paparazzi. And so I held a microphone that was attached to nothing and put my fingers in my ear and interviewed people. And they got really angry when they realized there was no camera. And they felt like idiots. And it was like, it was a really horrible, uncomfortable night.
Well, we're talking about acting on Radio Times, talking with Scott Greer, Tony Lawton, and Jen Childs, also talking about 1812 new production. It's called To the Moon. And stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoing, talking and frankly laughing with our guest, Jen Childs, producing artistic director, co-founder of 1812 Productions. And we've been talking a bit about their new comedy. It's called To the Moon. It's inspired by the life and career of Jackie Gleason, and it's at Christchurch Neighborhood House in Old City through May 17th. Also with us, actors Scott Greer and Tony Lawton, and our guests have spent many years here in Philadelphia, both acting and writing, and very much a part of the art and culture scene here in the city. Looks like folks want to join us at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times to join the conversation. Let me get, looks like Nancy. Nancy calling us from Collingswood. Go ahead, you're on Radio Times.
Hi. I just wanted to call in and comment that a group of friends and I saw this show, and we were probably a weird group because we were three medical librarians and one standardized patient.
Oh, excellent.
And, so we got it right away. We thought the whole show was hilarious, but we were curious as to how the rest of the audience, does everybody know what a standardized patient is? It's kind of a unique concept. Mm-hmm.
It is indeed. And I confess, Nancy, that I wasn't aware that this was a profession in a way. But nonetheless, let me toss that to Jen Childs.
Sure. And these guys can comment on how audiences have been recently. What we found in previews is that for some audiences, there is a bit of a learning curve. It's explained in the script. It's pretty much laid out so that hopefully, even if you don't know what it is, you get the idea of what it is. And Knockwood, people have been laughing, so right. I feel like they come along. It may take a little bit longer. Has that been?
Yeah, I think so. Matt Pfeiffer, the director, is also was also a standardized patient and was able to find some of those moments of artifice that it's to kind of teach the audience how to watch those scenes.
I mean, they are funny. I have to say, I mean, there's no sort of getting around that. Tony, anything you want to add to that?
No. That's all. I agree with everything that's been said.
My favorite kind of patient. I was going to say my favorite kind of guest, right? No, I have nothing to say. I wonder when you go sort of from the page to the stage, you know, sort of what, as someone who has written so much, do you play with things, sort of seeing how it works once you've got an audience?
Oh, yes.
Watching reacting?
I always say that the, especially for a comedy, the audience is the final character, because your laugh or lack of laugh finishes the rhythm of the play. Mm-hmm. It lets us know what's funny, what's not funny, what's landing. And we did some pretty significant rewrites over the course of the rehearsal and performance process. Mm-hmm. So,
is that sort of typical, I guess, when you
for a new one, we do 5 previews and things change a lot sometimes.
I was looking at some old Jackie, you know, Honeymooner shows yesterday in preparation for the show, and it's so interesting how the kind of patter, how quickly people talked back then.
Yeah,
I mean, this was a very talky TV show. Scott.
Well, and Jen has definitely written the script in that rhythm as well. And it is, I mean, it's breakneck. I mean, it feels like a freight train.
Yeah.
You know, there's not any pause is super earned and super important. And the rest is, it's very back and forth. And I love that kind of, you know, material,
right.
but it's, yeah, it's very different than contemporary, like, you know, like there aren't any
whatsoever.
Like, yeah.
I think there's two functions to that. One is that if the audience can think faster than the action, then they can see the joke coming. So there's we talk about staying ahead of the audience.
Yes.
So that there's a rapid pace in comedy helps you with that. And also it's a very musical style.
Yes.
I mean the part of what gets the laugh is just the pleasure of the sound of the voices moving at that pace and on that roller coaster.
Yeah.
Well, I think we heard that in your reading a bit. I mean, the rhythm, the sort of music.
Yeah.
Yeah, and as a playwright, I assume you're going for that, right?
Very much so. And, you know, this is not a new rhythm or something that's unique to me or even to the writers of the Honeymooners. You know, these are, like, you listen back to the Bickersons on radio with Don Ameche and Francis Langford. You know, these are tried and true rhythms. And so after this long, they're kind of in my body.
Yeah. But you seem so interested in this time and place, you know, Jack Benny and Lucille Ball, George Burns.
I know.
What
I'm
is
just
it about
a
that
nerd.
For you?
I'm a nerd.
Is it a nerd?
No, I think, well, my great-grandfather was in vaudeville.
Oh.
My grandfather inherited his corny sense of humor, and I always say, and I'm trying to make it brief, in my household, you knew that you were a grown-up when you could memorize and recite the following. One evening in October, when I was far from sober, I was carrying home a load with manly pride. Well, my feet began to stutter, and I sat down in the gutter, and a pig came up and sat down by my side. Well, we warbled about the weather when good friends get together, and a lady passing by was heard to say, "You can tell the man who boozes by the company he chooses." And the pig got up and slowly walked away. Now,
and how old were you when you mastered that?
I think it was about 8.
Really?
So, yes. That's how you knew you'd made it. So growing up with those rhythms around, I've been fascinated by history, and I feel like you're always standing on somebody's back. And no matter what new we make, you got to know where you've come from, too. Mm. And I think there's a timeless quality about some of this laughter, and I'm fascinated by why do some things still make us laugh and other things
don't?
No.
Yeah. Did you want to add something, Scott?
Mm. No. I mean, I feel that people ask often at the talkbacks during previews that, you know, well, what about people who don't know who Jackie Gleason is, you know, and they haven't
probably
watched
a generation
some,
or a piece
yeah,
of the generation.
Yeah. And I don't think it matters because, the response has been universally positive and people laugh because at the end of the day, funny is funny. And it's also recognizable, as she says, it's been, you know, I mean, maybe they've not seen The Honeymooners, but they've seen King of Queens, they've seen Family Guy, they, you know, all of this stuff is, all of these rhythms, all of this, it's in our DNA, you know, it's in our cultural DNA, and so.
Seems to work, right?
It does.
Let me get Jackie from Jenkintown to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Jackie. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi there.
Hi, Marty.
Hi there.
I just had to call in. The Gleason Show used to rehearse in a hotel on West 57th Street. I lived in New York at that time. And I was an aspiring young theater student at the American Theater Wing. And not knowing, totally ignorant, I got a temporary job as a receptionist in the hotel. And once I found out that the show was rehearsing there, of course I went on watch, you know,
sure,
hoping to see one of the people. And the great Gleason never showed up, but in the elevator one day I almost fell over because Art Carney gets into the elevator.
Oh, wow.
And I was flustered. I was not a very good theater person at the time. I totally lost it. But I never forgot because I used to watch the show like
That's
everybody
great.
Else.
Oh, what an amazing
story. That's a great
story,
Jackie. Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. It's no mystery that Gleason wasn't there because he hated rehearsing.
And yeah, I read that about
And he avoided
him.
It at all costs.
In fact, would sort of, I guess, walk in kind of last minute.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. He would, yeah. He would look at it. And you can see here and there on the Honeymooners where they kind of rescue him. And, you know, weren't you going to tell me about what happened at lunch? You know, I mean, that kind of thing. But not often. I mean, he was remarkable. Yeah. He would read through it and was right. Somebody would walk his part and he would come in and do it.
Yeah. And this one, TV was live, too, mm-hmm. right? I mean,
well, they taped in front of a live audience, but they didn't air in front of a live audience.
Well, and they didn't stop either.
Yeah,
they would, once they started, they taped two a week and of the Honeymooners. And this is the Honeymooners was a part of the Jackie Gleason show. It was just another one of his characters and sketches that he would do. And then he did this one, and it actually wasn't that well received. It was, you know, and people didn't understand why, you know, when I can just watch the Honeymooners right. and get everything else on the Jackie Gleason show, why we shouldn't watch that. And, you know, nobody knew it would become a classic. But they would film two a week, and they would do it in front of a live audience without stopping. So it was a live, you know, they called it live on film.
Right, live to tape. Live
right.
To tape. Let me get to it. Looks like CJ. Jackie, thanks for the call. CJ from Ben Salem to join us on Radio Times. Hi, CJ. Go ahead.
Hi.
You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi there.
I saw the show in previews, and I loved it. It was wonderful to see. But I have a question I didn't ask at the talkback. You guys are all Philadelphia-based actors, and I wonder if you at one point ever aspired to go to New York and be big stars, or do you have Law and Order on your credits? You know, they're usually in all, there's always some Law and Order thing on everybody's resume.
Right.
No, it's a good question. I want to hear from all three of our guests. In fact, Tony, let me start with you.
I got my graduate degree at Temple in 92 in acting, and I moved straight to New York, and I lived there for 4.5 years, and I made exactly $250 acting.
Really?
In 4.5 years. I had a lot of horrible survival jobs there. But I kept getting called down here to audition, and I moved down. So I finally moved back down here in 96, and this is the –
This is your home?
This is where I get all the work, all my work, and I wanted to be a big star, and I hold out a little bit of hope that I will still be a big star someday. But
a big star meaning like starring role?
A millionaire.
why not?
Yeah, you know. I think most people aspire to make the big time.
Sure. How about for you, Scott?
Yeah, I went to school on Long Island and had every intention of moving. I got a job my senior year at the Walnut Street Theater for the following season to be one of their acting apprentices, and I had every notion that, like the rest of my castmate and my classmates, I would move to New York. And I kept getting work, and that was 22 years ago.
Oh.
I mean, I don't know. I'm not a big star, but I haven't had a catering job or a non-theater related job since 1996. And I have lots of friends who are New York actors, and that's harder for them to say. And most New York actors work out of town anyway, and in the regions. I mean, there was a great article in the Washington Post this past weekend about the Tonys and how it's sort of become a marketing vehicle. And I'm not trying to this, you know, sure. Of course I would love to work on Broadway, but
sure.
It's also there are 30 to 40 Broadway shows a year as opposed to 21,000 in the regions. And most of the Broadway shows were commissioned and developed by not-for-profits in the regions, you know. So, you know, being a regional actor who makes a living being an actor is not too bad a life.
Yeah.
Know?
How about for you, Jen?
I never wanted to go to New York. London was always my thing. I was convinced that the Royal Shakespeare Company was waiting for me to graduate college so they could cast me in a lot of things. And they weren't. I went, and I found that out the hard way. Huh. But I don't know. New York has never really held a shine for me. I think I'm, especially since starting 1812, being able to make work here and to have a life here. You know, all of us own homes. We have families. Like Scott said, I haven't had to wait tables since the early 90s. And there's not a lot of artists who can say that. I think Philadelphia is very, very artist-friendly place to live and work and make really good work, you know, with people you care about.
Well, I have to ask you about your character, Patsy, only because she's featured on Newsworks.
Yes, indeed.
Helping residents of Philadelphia understand our political system.
Right.
You and Dave Davies.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say, you work really well together.
I think he's aces. I think he's wonderful.
He is wonderful. But so is Patsy.
Yes. Patsy is a character. Well, I should say Patsy is a character that I developed because of living in Philly. That's another gift of being in Philadelphia. You can own a home and you can have people like Patsy. Hello, for those of you who don't know me, my name is Patsy and I live at 714 Shug Street in South Philadelphia. I have a show called The View from My Stoop where I answer questions about politics. Now, I myself am bi nonpartisan. However, I am working with David Davies of the WHYY to talk about the mayor's race. And right before I was on here, I saw that Jim Kenney. He's a very nice mayor.
the bipartisan. Right?
Bi-nonpartisan,
right, exactly.
But yes, so Patsy was developed here, and there are many. We live in South Philly, so there are many Patsys right. In our neighborhood, and it comes from a great place of love.
Indeed. I mean, as you say, it's not caricature, it's clown.
It's clown, and yeah, very much. And she speaks the truth, you know. She speaks the truth.
Well, as I say to our listeners, go to Newsworks, mm-hmm. and you can hear our guest playing Patsy in conversation with Dave Davies. You're also working on, or you have a one-woman show, I Will Not Go Gently. Mm-hmm. That's going to, what, open in about a year?
In about a year. So it's still in the very, very beginning stages. It's about being in the second half of your life. I woke up one day and I realized, I was like, oh, I'm not in my mid-40s or late-40s or any. I'm at the beginning of the second half of my life. And what do you want that to mean? So that's sort of the genesis. It's about aging gracefully and not so gracefully.
So. It's impossible to age gracefully. I will just tell you, as someone who was doing it. Well, I want to thank all three of you so much for joining us today on Radio Times, talking about this new play. It's To the Moon. It's the latest production of 1812 Productions. Jen, thanks so much for joining us. Jennifer
thank
Childs.
You.
And she's producing artistic director, co-founder of 1812 Productions, and the writer of this new play. Scott Greer, thank you very much as well.
Thank you. This has been great.
It's been a lot of fun. And he's a 20-year veteran of the Philadelphia Theater. And Tony Lawton, thank you very much as well.
It's my great pleasure. Thank you.
A great pleasure to have all three of you with us on Radio Times. And Tony has, as he told us, been acting in Philadelphia for more than 20 years now. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times, and you can find out much more about this program, including how to download a podcast of the show, how to find us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, how to get the newsletter, and also how to listen to us on satellite radio. We are channel 122, part of NPR's satellite channel. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Susan Greenbaum, Debbie Bilder, Emily Bryant, and John Ahrens. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thank you so much for joining us.